While athletes might spend a lifetime becoming the best in their sport, some decide to use their notoriety to express their opinion on political and social matters. Now, athletes often become symbols of their communities and countries. Therefore, governments and political entities often try to capitalize and interject in international diplomatic issues. I'm Sky Nell Hughes, and on this edition of 360 View, we are going to look at the politicization of athletes and the increasing power they have on global relations. Let's get started. The Summer Olympics in Paris are just under a year away. Even though the organization claims to ban forms of protest, it wraps itself up in sports-centered political controversies every year. Our national correspondent, Roxana Solano, joins us to talk about a possible addition to the roster next year.
Scotty, it's been nearly a year and a half since open conflict began in Ukraine, and Olympic officials are still split on whether or not to punish individual Russian athletes. The International Olympic Committee announced in July Russia and Belarus would not be invited to the Olympics due to the conflict in Ukraine. However, the athletes of those countries will be allowed to compete under a neutral flag if the specific sports allows it. The IOC went back and forth for a month, but finally had to make a decision as the deadline to send out invitations is generally a year before the opening ceremony. The committee was actually swayed by the United Nations Human Rights Council. They sent a letter advising an outright ban on Russian and Belarusian athletes would be discriminatory and a flagrant violation of human rights. Ukraine, on the other hand, has said their athletes will be boycotting any sports which allows athletes from Russia or Belarus to participate. 35 countries signed on to a joint letter saying they do not believe athletes from Russia or Belarus should be allowed to compete. Quote, Russia and Belarus have it in their own hands to pave the way for their athletes. Full return to the international sports community, namely by ending the war they started. Here's a breakdown of which sports Russians will not be competing in. The track and field organization World Athletics has decided to ban Russians for the foreseeable future. When it comes to swimming, World Aquatics is taking Russia's return slowly. They claim to be leaning towards allowing Russia and Belarus to return to the sport. Swimming, diving, water polo, artistic swimming, but they're taking their sweet time. But one big exception from the beginning, tennis. Not only did the men's and women's tours not exclude Russian or Belarusian players beginning in 2022, but they even went as far as to fine tournaments, including Wimbledon, imposing restrictions. One of the most popular summer sports and a favorite sport for Russia is gymnastics. Russian and Belarusian gymnasts will be allowed to take part in competitions as individual neutral athletes starting in 2024. This is actually the fifth Olympic Games Russians have faced sanctions, but the country has faced exceptional pressure within the past decade due to increasing geopolitical competition with NATO and the West. I'm Roxana Solano for 360 View. Back to you, Scotty.
Thank you so much, Roxana. To help us discuss is Olusola Ogunubi. He is a PhD and visiting scholar in the Department of Political Science at Carleton University in Canada. Thank you so much for joining us. I want to start off, what should be the policy in regards to international diplomacy and athletics?
Thanks for the question. I've been thinking about this. It's the point is to, in thinking about international diplomacy and sports, we must recognize that in some ways, sports have been weaponized by states, especially as a symbol of great power status. And you would realize that there's a fine balance, as a result of that, there's a fine balance between governance, finance, and ethics when it comes to global sports diplomacy and the involvement of countries, teams, and athletes, and even fans as well. And so I believe the policy that governs international diplomacy and sports should take into consideration these global dynamics in a way that recognizes the flow of global finance or global capital, governance issues relating to sports neutrality by international sporting federations, But my argument has always been that the idea of sports neutrality or a policy around sports neutrality has always been a myth, because states represent interest at the global arena, and that is irrespective of sports. And sports is only one of those platforms of virtual arena where international diplomacy takes place, and the global flow of capital also dictates what policy should be, the outlook of policy relating to international diplomacy and sports, sporting engagement, and the involvement of what you call international sporting federations or the IOCs. And so the point I want to stress in relating to how what kind of policy should shape international diplomacy and sporting engagement is one that takes cognizance or is sensitive to issues around governance, finance, ethics, and humanitarian needs that and the expectation of both of fans, athletes, teams, and sporting federations as well. And so in simple sense, I think that policy around international diplomacy and sporting engagement are evolving today from what is previously referred to as sports neutrality to more of visible engagement in issues that are outside of sports and through sanctions and the like. So we see a trend where sports neutrality is not being taken into consideration as it was in the previously, but today we have a situation where states are, where sporting federations are wading into the arena of politics to make decisions that govern sports generally.
Do you feel like athletes are being pressured by either the public or their government to take stands on controversial issues, even if they do not wish to?
Well, in a way, there's you can't deny the fact that there's some bit of pressure on the part of government, because in many of these sporting codes, athletes represent states, and in some other instances, they represent themselves. But in many cases, you'll find situations where there's tremendous pressure on the part of athletes to sometimes consider taking an ethical stand in expectations of aligning with certain human rights requirements or expectations from their countries. And I think in some instances, this is also partly because some of these athletes represent certain global brands that have requirements on them to project the brand in certain light and to not speak out at all in respect to human rights abuses, in respect to violation of human rights in some parts of the countries would be a dent on this global brand. So the pressure is not only from countries, the pressure is also from their sponsors, the brands that they represent, and also sometimes from a personal ethical standpoint of the athletes themselves. So it's a mixed blend of pressure from a personal ethical stand and from also from government expectation or government states in diplomacy that athletes are required to follow along with. And so to not do that, to not align yourself with teams or federations' expectations from you representing them would might jeopardize your career as an athlete, might jeopardize your success as an athlete. So the pressure is actually multifaceted in a way that the sources are from the states sometimes, but from government, from sporting federations, and in other cases it's also from the personal interest of these athletes that seek to project themselves in a certain light globally.
Are we seeing this more universally or dominant in some countries versus others? Why is that?
Well, the fact of the matter is that there's most of the evidence that you want to points to examples from the West generally. And that's part, for me, my argument is that the reason why you have much of this pressure coming from athletes or sporting federations from the West is because of the flow of global capital. I believe that it is because of the interest that global capital seeks to protect. There's a demand to speak out in a way that does not jeopardize their brand, in a way that does not jeopardize their investments, and so not speaking out in certain issues that concern human rights abuse, that concerns the projection of their brand, can be a downside for these companies that support or that sponsor athletes and sporting federations and global competition. So I think it's true that you'll find most of this pressure on athletes, on sporting federations, on teams, and on even global competitions from the West. The threats to impose sanctions, as in the case of Russia, as in the case of Belarus, as in the case of Qatar when they hosted the World Cup, and subsequently. And so these examples, you'll not mostly find some of these cases in non-Western countries, as it were, but they are dominant or predominant in Western countries where there is a lot of pressure from global brands and global capital on athletes, teams, and where the bulk of their sponsorship comes from. And so until we delink, which is almost impossible, to delink the interest of global capital from sporting federations or sporting engagements, then there might be a more neutral atmosphere, a neutral arrangement to sporting involvement. But the trend has been set already. In this case, you have many sporting federations being involved as a result of Russian illegal invasion of Ukraine. You now have a precedent that has been set with many sporting federations being involved in non-political issues, non-sporting issues, by imposing sanctions or threatening to impose sanctions on actors within, whether it's sporting athletes or officials from Russia and Belarus.
Is there a difference between political pressure being applied or the enforcement of religious laws and standards of one country being enforced?
In some ways, I would say yes, and that's because it's very typical for many Western standards to be projected as universal. And I say this as somebody who is African and also living in Canada. There's a tendency for liberal agenda or Western liberal principles, as it were, to be projected on the global scale as the norm, as the global norms that should be accepted broadly by all states, irrespective of cultural varieties or cultural differences or government priorities, as it were. So you would find a situation where there's pushback from non-Western countries, especially as it relates to issues around LGBTQ or issues around even the human rights generally, in terms of standards that are applicable across the world. And so you find in many instances the pressure are from the Western countries imposing or threatening to impose sanctions on states that do not, or societies or states that do not conform to their own standards. And I think that's where you most likely find issues, or issues that, you know, where sports and politics begin to collide, because it is a known fact that states use politics, use sports as a platform for projecting their global influence or global status. And so you'd find sports being used as an instrument to projects the standards that many of these Western countries represent. And you find that, for instance, in the World Cup, for instance, you have England was playing, I think, their first match, and they insisted on wearing the LGBTQ armband, and FIFA had to come out strongly to threaten to impose sanctions on countries that use, you know, their captain used the armband. And that's because of Qatar's disapproval of LGBTQ issues and rights and the likes, rights of queer communities and LGBT communities generally.
Thank you, Olusola Ogunubi. Now, after the break, we are going to look at why the Olympics continues to create controversy despite having a policy to prevent the interjection of politics.
Hi, I'm Rick Sanchez, and I'm here to plead with you, whatever you do, do not watch my new show. Seriously, why watch something that's so different? Why listen to opinions that you won't get anywhere else? Look, if it pleases you to have the State Department, the CIA, weapons makers, multi-billion dollar corporations choose your facts for you, go ahead. Why change? And whatever you do, don't watch my show. Stay mainstream, because I'm probably going to make you uncomfortable. My show is called Direct Impact. But again, you probably don't want to watch it, because it might just change the way you think.
The architects of NATO's proxy war on Russia have big plans for the Kiev regime. As Ukraine's counteroffensive fails, the country's post-war realities are being planned in the West. Alas, these plans will fail too.
Welcome back. Now we are going to continue our discussion about the blurred lines between athletics and politics with Olusola Ogunubi. He is a PhD and visiting scholar in the Department of Political Science at Carleton University in Canada. Thank you for staying with us.
You're welcome.
What role does the Olympics play? Is it unrealistic to think the IOC will ever be void of political controversies in the future?
That question is hard to answer, really. But I think that the IOC will continue to play the role it's played. But the one example that gives some kind of consequences for or precedence for what role it might begin to play in future is with this Russia issue, where it's the sanctions have been imposed over non-sporting issues, and it is very likely that in the long run, IOC will likely want to justify this as an ad hoc situation and not use it as a template for subsequent engagement or subsequent sanctions. And it would be interesting to see how this will play out when these issues, or when we see similar scenario involving a Western state or a Western country having to engage in political issues or political confrontation with other states. And it would be interesting to see what action the IOC takes or International Sporting Federations take in this dimension. My thinking is that it will be very difficult for the IOC to do much, to change its stance or to take a stance that is different from what it has done before as it relates to Russia in this instance, because a precedent has been set already in terms of sports neutrality. Over the years, there's been a fundamental principle of international sporting federations, including the IOC, sports neutrality. But this principle or this policy has been tossed aside in the instance of Russian and Belarusian competitions and athletes. And so we'll see a trend that has been set already in how the IOC is likely to act in future when it involves rivalry among states or invasion of one country by another, and the implication that will have for international sanctions and global sponsorship. But the effects that might also have would also depend on the flow of global capital in the sporting industry. We also need to look at where is global capital coming from? Is it shifting away from America and Europe and towards China and Russia? And I believe that it is where the flow of global capital, the direction of international global capital, that would also inform the kind of policies or that will inform the kind of actions that the IOCs take, because their funding or their sponsorship is linked to many of these factors. That is just my opinion, really.
Do fans in various countries around the globe have different opinions on this?
It's possible to see a scenario where fans are, of course, not united in the sense of, if you read many of the commentaries in the news, whether on Instagram or on the social media spaces generally, you see disagreement among fans on across countries and across sporting codes on the imposition of sanctions or how sanctions should be imposed. And many of these points would raise the fact that as much as sanctions are important, as much as sanctions are important to command or to impose to command a certain direction of action from states, you would also find that many are concerned about the interest or the welfare of these athletes. And because athletes, sometimes you find athletes that have come out to condemn the policies of their own states still being casualties of this sporting sanction. So it's pretty much difficult to determine how much or the kind of effect that reaction that international fans would have when it comes to many of these issues around sanctions and sanctions relating to non-political issues or non-sporting issues that are invading the sporting engagement. So the fact is that international fans across the world are not in unison in terms of how they react or how they respond to some of these issues. Even within countries where this sanction have been imposed or this sanction are bearing the consequence of these sanctions, reactions vary from country to country, and you see that in the different cases that involves Russia. Even in South Africa, for example, where even though that might be on the side, where you have Caster Semenya, I think, being imposed with certain conditions for her to participate in global in athletic for her own in her own division, athletic division. So it's there's a wide variety of reaction from fans relating to what kind of sanction is imposed and where the sanctions are coming from and where it is directed, who is directed to.
I have to consider the owners. Do most owners in FIFA, Formula One, and the KHL want to get involved in politics, or do they want to try to stay neutral? Are they being pressured to get involved?
Yes, I think that points back to my earlier point about how there's a deep connection between global capital and international sporting codes and investments and how much has gone sponsorship generally and even hosting of international competitions. And so there is the pressure in most times are coming from the level of global capital or the level of even governments especially, and the extent to which many of these brands also seek to protect their interest, protect their investments in a way that does not create a bad business atmosphere for them, requires them to take certain stances or certain positions in global political terrain in a way that protects, most of the time it will be to protect their investments or to be to protect their interest, business interest, and not create an impression that they are not sensitive to global issues relating to climate change, relating to humanitarian issues, relating to human rights. And so there's always a requirement on the part of global investment or global businesses that are owners of many of these sporting codes to speak out in relation to issues that affects or likely to affect their business interest or their investment in sports over the years. And you also see that in the athletes that they sponsor, there's a requirement on these athletes to also seek to project or to take side or take a particular position in line with this company interest or owner's interest. So they cannot speak at cross purposes to each other. There must be some alignment in terms of global capital or investment or business interest or sponsors and the owners of these sporting codes, as you refer to them.
Why are we seeing more athletes and sports media getting involved with activism in politics? And does this help or actually hurt the game?
Well, I think in some ways you can say that the efforts are in good light. I believe that many of these athletes are icons. They are celebrities in their own right. And if they are able to use their platform to raise awareness on certain issues that concern them, pretty much it's a welcome development. And if athletes are able to use their platform for activism, there's no issue. I don't think there's any issue around that. But what's important is that we see that it's no longer cool to stay neutral when it comes to political issues around the world, especially when it involves your country. We see in case where Djokovic had to make a statement relating to Kosovo and Serbia. And so you always find cases where athletes use their platform to push certain, to push interests that align, issues that align with their interest, or issues that align with their sponsors, or issues that align with their federations across the world. So it's, and also with media outlets generally. So I don't think it's out of place for athletes and media, sports media platforms, to use their platform or to use their resources to project or to create some kind of awareness around issues that they are concerned with or issues that their sponsors are concerned with. It, I think it's in place. It is useful for a robust environment where both that politics, issues around politics, issues that are important for society are being raised through those platforms that athletes and sports media represent.
Thank you. That was Olusola Ogunubi, PhD and professor at Carleton University in Canada. You know, not all athletes or countries encourage or force political involvement. They just play their sport. But with every aspect of life increasingly becoming divided, therefore controversial, of course, it is expected athletes, whether by choice or not, would have more influence in games having nothing to do with their sport. The ironic part, when athletes on the global scale become political figureheads, is usually the ones who make the most noise about one issue fails to actually address the issues in their own homeland. In 1936, Adolf Hitler used the grandeur of hosting the Berlin Olympics to promote Aryan supremacy and Nazi propaganda. Many publications in the West called for a boycott, especially the black-owned media in the United States. However, the 18 black athletes on Team USA went on to win 14 Olympic medals. And while the world saw them as a major blow to a Hitler's racist ideology, upon returning home, Jesse Owens, one of the black medal winners, reflected in his writings, "It became increasingly apparent that everyone was going to slap me on the back, want to shake my hand, or have me up in their suite. But no one was going to offer me a job." I'm Skynell Hughes, and this has been your 360 view of the news affecting you. Thanks for watching.